The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Are you ready? It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 131 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. This week I've got a special interview with Jim Zub, one of the creators of Disney Kingdom's Marvel Comics Figment, based on the popular character from the Disney theme park. He talks about how the project got going and what it was like to work for Disney and Marvel, as well as the interesting things that are going to happen in the 5-issue miniseries. We also talk a little bit about Skull Kickers, which is what he's best known for currently. Since there's a lot to get to, let's get on with the show.
Right at the start of everything that's new, one little spark lights up for you. Imagination, a dream can be.
I want to welcome to the podcast Jim Zub, creator of such good things as Skull Kickers, and now is doing something called Figment for Disney and Marvel. So how are you doing today, Jim?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good, good. It's good to talk with you about this because the Disney-Marvel sort of marriage has created a lot of interesting things, and it gives the creator of Skull Kicker a chance to do Figment comics.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my first published Marvel gig, and I'm really excited about it. And it's a really unique opportunity, and I can't wait for people to read what we've been putting together. Our crew is just fantastic, so...
Great. So how did this happen? How did you get to write for Marvel and Disney this way?
Well, it was actually a pretty unusual circumstance. Normally, with this kind of stuff, it tends to be, you build up a relationship with an editor, and they might move from publisher to publisher, and so you tend to carry those contacts with you. But in this case, to be 100% honest, the editor, Bill Roseman, contacted me back in December out of the blue. He just sent me a cold call kind of email and asked me if I might be interested in a project. And we set up a phone call that day, and he threw the idea out to me that they were developing a bunch of sort of co-branded material with Disney over at the Marvel office, and that in the discussions that came up in the office, that my name was one of the, that I was someone that they wanted to do work with, and they thought this might be a good fit. So they kind of came to me out of the blue, which is really unexpected. Nice way to sort of wrap up the year. And we started plugging away on it. The most intimidating part, of course, is when they tell you that, you're going to be working with some of the Disney Imagineers and sort of bouncing ideas off of them and helping to develop and kind of broaden the mythology behind one of the famous Disney attractions.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of cool. Did you find that to be a lot of fun to talk
about? Yeah, absolutely. It was something I was a little intimidated at first, but everyone on the team was great, and the Disney crew have been super supportive all the way through. So...
Oh, that's very cool. It's neat when things come together like that. So very, very good. Now, as far as Figment, this is a character we've seen before, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Figment's a pretty famous character from the, you know, the Walt Disney World Park down in the Epcot Center.
Mm-hmm. So what made them want to go into a comic? And are there other plans for this character as well besides the comic?
I'm not entirely sure. I think that what they want to do is, I can't really speak to the longer term plans, but I think they realize that they've got an incredible amount of material, you know, in the Disney parks that they've never really developed. And, you know, something like Pirates of the Caribbean obviously worked out really well. They were able to put a story to that ride and really broaden the appeal of it and strengthen, you know, that as a title and as a story and broaden those characters and everything else. And I think it's sort of a, not that I'm saying we're going to necessarily get a movie out of this, but I think it's that idea of sort of broadening and digging deeper into the titles that they have and into the material that they have in their archives.
Because Figment is an interesting character, you know, and especially the story that you write in the book, and I'm not going to spoil too much. I would much rather have people pick it up and read it because
sure.
It's got a lot of interesting story going on. But as far as Figment, did they give you much in the way of idea of what they would like to have happen in this comic?
Well, that was the interesting part, is that they really they were very open to me sort of putting different ideas into play. So it wasn't any kind of one-set thing that they already knew they wanted. I came to them with, I obviously did research on the attraction and how what's already been established there. And then based on that, I came back to them with sort of three very divergent ideas. Okay, we could go in this kind of direction or this other one. You know, some of them were a little bit more, I wasn't sure what kind of story they really wanted. And they didn't necessarily know as well either. So putting out these different ideas then gave us something to sort of attach to. And one of them was, you know, the original attraction has kind of a fun, adventurous, steampunky kind of approach where you've got these, strange kind of clockwork machines that Dreamfinder has. And there's this very whimsical, adventurous quality to it. And so that was one of the directions I said we could really focus on, and that was the one that both the Imagineers and the Marvel editorial team thought was a good focal point. So that's really where we hunkered down. So,
Now, if somebody didn't know who Figment was, how would you describe the character to that person?
Well, Figment is the companion of Dreamfinder, and the two of them are kind of a unit in that they always kind of adventure together in the broader scheme of things. And so Figment is supposed to be quite literally that, a figment of imagination. He's a pure sort of a spark of creative ideas and dream stuff. And the potential of someone's imagination is sort of made manifest. And so Figment is this whimsical and almost childlike character of this little dragon that doesn't know that he's supposed to have limitations and in turn, in many ways, doesn't have them. He's very curious and, you know, adventurous and wants to see and explore and find new things and partake of anything, you know, creative. And so it's this very broad, you know, and kind of uplifting character. And then Dreamfinder is, you know, his best friend and very close companion. And Dreamfinder is this gentleman, gentleman from England who essentially comes up with a way to tap into sort of pure dream stuff or pure imagination, and the two of them go off on adventures together.
Is this series – now, how many books are in the Figment series as you're creating it?
So we're doing a 5-issue miniseries. And so that's going to, I assume be collected in a book later on. The first issue comes out in just a couple weeks here in June. And so I'm very excited for people to finally get a chance to read it because the character has been around now for decades, but they've never really delved any deeper beyond what's in the actual ride itself and just a handful of little tidbits here and there. And so being able to concentrate on the character and the setting and really dig in and broaden that, I guess you call it mythology of it, is something it's been a real joy to work on. And when you've got an artist like, you know, Philippe Andrade, who's just incredible, you know, visualizing the story stuff that we're coming up with, that makes it even sweeter.
Mm-hmm. His art almost has like a painted feel to it, it seems like.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting, too, because he sort of puts these ink washes into it, and it's got a structure, but it's also, it never gets too stiff. It's very energetic, and it's very gestural in a lot of ways. And I think that adds to that dreamlike quality, particularly when we move beyond the first chapter. In the first chapter, a good chunk of it takes place in kind of turn-of-the-century London. But once we delve into sort of the other side and these realms of imagination, you know, he's really able to cut loose.
Well, it's interesting. There are contrasts within the book, and I'm grateful to be able to get a chance to have a look at the first issue, is that there's kind of a lot of contrast between, let's say, Figment and his friend and the real-life situations in which they find themselves.
Absolutely. And that was kind of intentional as well. I wanted to start the story off in a very grounded kind of historical London and give it a very kind of earthy feel, so that when we move past that and when we sort of shift over to the more imaginative places, that there is that sense of contrast, that you really do get that sense that we're somewhere completely new and vibrant and unexpected, rather than just having the same kind of palette or the same sort of look all the way through.
Is the artwork going to change, too, as far as that goes, as you get into the more fantastic kind of things?
Yeah, you can definitely see in the later issues that, you know, Felipe is also really pushing more kind of exaggerated, almost cartoonish sort of elements as we open up kind of the imaginative floodgates of it. And that's a really cool thing, too, because when we do cut back to London or when we do show some of the other things happening there, you really do have that sense of these two distinctive places and how they differ from each other.
Mm. One thing I'm kind of also fascinated by is that it has like a childlike feel to the story.
Yeah, we definitely wanted to sort of channel that kind of Wizard of Oz or Alice in Wonderland kind of feeling to the artwork. You know, some of the people that I've showed it to, they compared it to Scotty Young's, you know, Oz comic series, which is a huge compliment. I love those books, and I feel like they've got the right kind of balance of that fun, energetic, whimsical quality, but still, you know, the storytelling's really strong, and there's emotional content there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting because this is a kind of an all-ages book.
Absolutely.
You know, you can be an adult. You can read it with your kids, very likely. And, of course, Disney, I'm sure, was very happy with that aspect of it, to be able to do something that not only promotes their individual characters, but also is something that the whole family can enjoy.
Yeah. You know, I didn't want us to make it childish, but I feel like that there's something in the best way possible, kind of uplifting and innocent about it. And I don't mean that in a negative way, that you can tell a story that is very broad and kind of for a wider audience. And that doesn't mean that you're necessarily making it kiddie or that you're not dealing with, you know, sort of deeper concepts. It's just that an adult may read it and they may get a little different sort of story beats out of it than a child would, you know, or a kid reads it and they get sort of those adventurous and sort of the silly qualities to it. And then an adult reads it and goes, oh, there's more going on here underneath the surface. And there's thoughts about, you know, the way that our lives can become very kind of static if we let it, or the fact that how important creativity and imagination is to us sort of pushing ourselves and heading into, you know, places where we wouldn't normally take risk, you know, if we're not creative, if we're not sort of inspired.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an interesting thing, too, because, you know, sometimes some of us adults who don't, you know, I don't happen to have children, and I look at kids and sometimes I don't understand what's going on, you know, and the way that they process things.
Right.
That's a little scary at times. Depends on the kid, you know, they'll just come out with something out of the blue. But that's the way that kids work. Their imagination is always engaged, and they're always able to see things, connections that adults don't see. We lose that as we get a little older, seems like.
Absolutely. I think you can have this sort of quality where, because much like with the character of Figment himself, because they've never been told that they can't do something. In many ways, they can just sort of head forth intrepidly in a direction because they don't know the rules of the game. And in many ways, that's a wonderful thing because then you've got the freedom to try things that other people might assume could not be done, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Dreamfinder has to sort of understand over the course of the story is getting in touch with that aspect of himself and being able to take those creative risks and, the fear of failure. If you don't put yourself in a situation where you can fail, you also don't put yourself in a situation where you can achieve. And I think that that's a very fundamental kind of story. And so as much as you can say, you know, it's an all-ages story or it's, you know, it has these kind of cartoonish and whimsical elements, there's some important sort of messages there as well.
Okay. Now, as far as, like, fleshing out the adult goes, did Disney have a concept that they wanted that character to kind of be like, or did you get to kind of put your imagination into him and make him into something that we might not have seen before?
Well, that was, again, once we had the sort of main story figured out, you know, I was able to come up with, okay, this is the evolution of the characters and this is what they're going to be up against. The toughest thing was not even so much the personality of the characters, because some of that is established quite clearly in the ride. But what was difficult was coming up with sort of the antagonist or what they would be fighting against or what sort of the difficulties they would be coming up against. You know, when you're on a ride in an attraction at the park, there isn't necessarily a sense of conflict per se. You're going and you're having an experience and you're seeing all sorts of cool things, but there's never a sense of, you know, danger or difficulty per se. You're more just on the ride for the visual and the auditory experience itself. But with this, we had to come up with, okay, what is in their way? What do they need to overcome? You know, what is Dreamfinder trying to do? And how do we come up with characters that fit within the scope of what's been established, but are new and different enough that we can add to and deepen sort of the storytelling there?
Now, I have to ask you, of course, did you ever go on the ride before this?
I did. You know, that was the funny part, was that one of the things that Bill Roseman asked me back in December was, you know, he said, have you ever been to Epcot? And I said, actually, when I was 12 years old, my family went to Disney World, and that was one of the rides I quite fondly remember. No way to have imagined that years and years later I would be involved with any of this stuff. But it was kind of funny that, yeah, I did know the ride. I'm not, there are people who are very much, as much as there are Disney fans, there are inside that sort of larger group, there are people who are Disney park fans. And mm-hmm. Figment is one of the characters that's park specific. And they love that character. They have a lot of nostalgia for that character from their youth. When it was announced that we were doing this series, I picked up hundreds of Twitter followers, and almost all of them were Disney park fans who sent me photos of, like, their, you know, tattered Figment stuffed animals and photos of themselves at the attraction. And you know, their nostalgia was really amazing and inspiring to me, because I realized that this story that we were putting together, that there was a group of people who are distinctively, you know, excited. You know, I mean, I want to obviously get as many readers as possible and new readers, but there are people who knew the character and have been looking forward to seeing more, and that we've got something there that they're going to be really excited about. And that's cool, you know. It's a little intimidating because you realize that there's, you know, you've got a legacy that you're sort of tapping into and that you want to achieve something that pleases them and pleases yourself at the same time. But as a whole, it's been a really cool and inspiring experience.
I was going to say, no pressure there.
Oh, yeah. There's pressure. Yeah, and it's funny, too, because as much as my, you know, like my family, they're not really comic book fans or superhero, you know, sort of fans or things like that. So when I tell them I'm working on my own comics, they think that that's neat and they understand that that is good. But when you tell, you know, the general public, oh, I'm doing a project for Disney, it takes on a real, you know, a different feel to them. Like, they're like, oh, wow, this is a big deal. And people that previously have not really paid attention to stuff I'm doing, now we're suddenly like, oh, Jim's a writer now. Like, you know, which is kind of cool. It's neat to be able to tap into a little bit of that. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the Disney brand is so, you know, beloved around the world, and a lot of people, it's their dream to even be involved with that kind of stuff. And so I try not to take that for granted, but I'm also not going to let that, you can't let that sort of slow you down. You've got to try and tell the best story you can and bring your A game to it and see what comes out of it.
Well, I really enjoyed the first issue.
Well, thank you.
I thought it was a great. It draws you in right away. You know, you everybody can relate to the situation in which the adult is in.
Yeah.
And you know that pulls us in, and we feel for that character. And then when Figment becomes involved, you feel that sort of childlikeness come back. That's still inside him, and that could very well be inside of all of us.
Right. Right. And there's this, you know, whimsical quality to it, but the undercurrent is something, you know, where Blair has this goal and he needs to try and deliver on, you know, his potential and deliver on the inventions that he's been working on. And I think that the contrast between those two characters, their aspects, you know, Figment is an aspect of him in that sense, but is also very different, and that they, you know, that they contrast each other in a really cool an exciting way. I'm happy with the fact that if you know the attraction, you will enjoy it. But if you're a brand new reader who knows nothing about the Disney stuff or even knows that this character exists, you can pick up that first issue and have everything you need to start on a fun story. And I think that that's something that we went in very carefully and thought a lot about, so that you can bring in a Disney fan, but you don't necessarily have to be in order to try this out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a real plus for the book, because, you know, not everybody's a Disney fan. As many as there are, and there are quite a lot of Disney fans, you don't. There's a lot of us who don't exactly, even if we've been to Disney World, and I've been to Disney World, but never don't quite remember this ride.
Right.
So this was good for me because I've got to be reintroduced to it. And I think that's something that's going to – you're helping Disney on several levels, because you're also giving them – you know, you're getting people to realize that there's all the kind of stuff at Disney World or Disneyland for this stuff.
So. Well, I think that's what's so neat about it, is the fact that – even though this character's been around for, you know, decades, you've still got a good chunk of people who don't know that much about the character. They might visually recognize them, but then they don't know anything sort of beyond that. And the fact that we were given enough material that we had something to start with, but that there wasn't that much developed behind the surface, you know, it was a real joy to be able to come up with a framework and a story and a personality, and in some ways, you know, expand upon the voice and the personality of the character that's been established and deepen them with an origin story.
That must have been real fun for you since you've been on the ride. That must have been something special.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird, too, because, you know, as much as all this stuff, when you're working on comics and especially licensed material, and you're tapping into some of those properties that you remember as a kid or that you had nostalgia for, you know, it can be this kind of surreal experience. And my background is in art, so I actually went to school for animation, and I did a bunch of TV animation work, and I teach at an art college here in Toronto. But, you know, when I was in, like, high school, you know, Disney would have been the company that I would have loved to work for. And now I'm working for them in an unexpected way as a writer rather than as an artist. But in many ways, there's a lot more control and involvement where I'm coming up with the thing rather than just being someone who's, you know, drawing someone else's ideas. And so that, not that, you know, there's anything wrong with that, but just that it's a different role than I would have necessarily thought of for myself. But I'm thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it, and can't wait for people to dig in.
That's going to be fun. Do they have an exact date? You were saying sometime in June.
I believe it's – hold on, just checking my calendar here. If I'm not mistaken, the first issue is on stands, I want to say, June 11th.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like June 11th.
Okay. Well, that's good. So that's not very far away.
No, it feels weird. Whenever you start a new project – it always feels far away, you know, months and months down the road. You're like, oh, yeah, and then that'll come out. And now that we're on the cusp of this thing actually coming out, you get that weird sort of twinge of excitement and fear of, oh, man, Now people are going to read it. And, it's just a part of the process with the whole thing. And, I'm proud of all the work we're doing, but there's just that little trepidation of, geez, when you've read it over so many times and you've seen the script and you've seen the art and you've seen the colors and you see the lettering proof and you read it and you reread it, you get to know it extremely well. And to a reader who's never seen it before and they're reading it fresh, how will they respond to it?
Well, I think it's a really good start. You're setting up what's going to happen in the future issues, especially in the first issue.
Absolutely.
So I think that anybody – I know some friends who are big Disneyites, and I think that they're going to love it. And I think anybody who is interested in imagination, I think, will be able to pick up and understand what's going on as the series goes forward.
Well, thank you.
Now, the question is, of course, you've got 5-issue miniseries. Without
right.
spoiling much, are there any kind of a TV guide idea of what they're going to be facing after the first issue? Of course, don't give anything away.
Right.
I don't want to get anybody in trouble here.
Well,
No.
So essentially, I don't think it's because the name of the original ride is called Journey into Imagination, I don't think it's a big spoiler to anyone that that's kind of at the core of what we're going to be doing. They're going to be leaving London where they start, and they end up going on an actual journey. They're going to go to a realm of imagination, and when they get there, they're going to be coming up against a whole host of unexpected sort of challenges that they've got to overcome. And at the same time, there are things happening in London in their absence that they're going to have to deal with if and when they get home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a fun sort of structure and interplay of the different elements and trying to get them all working and designing essentially new Disney characters, which is probably one of the weirdest and most surreal aspects of the whole thing, is when
wow.
we were early on and sort of saying, okay, it would be really helpful to have a new character here, or this would be really great to have this kind of a thing. And when I first said it, I was sort of just expecting them to go, oh no, we can't do that. And everyone was like, oh great. Well, what do you like what? And I said, well, how about this? And they said, good. And I was like, oh, okay, we just made a Disney character, all right, that's pretty cool. I got to watch, I don't let this go to my head, but yeah, that was all right, So.
Well, not many people get to do that.
It's kind of a fun thing, and I hope that the characters and the story that we create, live on above and beyond the comic that we put together. I'm really proud of the work we're doing, and I hope that readers respond to it strongly, and that that it just really, hits the mark in terms of people's expectations, or in some ways beyond their expectations, that they don't know what they're going to get, and we deliver something fun and unexpected for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I bet it'll be fun if you actually, after this is done, you look and see that Disney actually starts using those characters that you create.
It would be pretty surreal. I was talking to some of the Imagineers, and I said to them, probably the most surreal thing I could see is if I went back to the park, and they have an actual gift shop for the ride. And if they were selling the graphic novel of it at the gift shop, I think I would probably – that would feel really strange and amazing to me. Yeah.
Well, I bet you that's going to happen because it starts off with a very strong first issue, and I bet it won't take long before this gets collected into either a hardcover or a trade, I would imagine.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited about what we've been able to put together, and I can't wait for people to give it a read. And I hope it really, delivers on everything that we could do for both the concept behind it, and I think the broader idea of that kind of whimsical modern fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really good, and I'm sure it's going to sell very well. And of course, it might have a life that goes on for many years, so that'll be a good thing. And I hope people buy it. It's called Figment. It's going to be a 5-issue miniseries. It's going to start on June 11th. So if you haven't let your comic shop know that you want to get this book, call them right now and tell them so that they make sure that they have a copy that you want.
Absolutely.
So that'd be great. Now, Jim, why don't we talk a little bit about other stuff that you're involved
sure.
with as well?
Sure. I've been very busy lately.
Sounds like it. Now, Skull Kickers, of course, is probably what you're best known for.
Yeah.
How's that coming along?
It's going really well. We're in the midst of our fifth story arc. So issue, at the time you and I are recording this, our 27th issue just came out today. And so, it's sort of unbelievable to me that we've got 27 issues in the can and we're still plugging away. The Skull Kickers story is planned for 6 arcs in total. So we'll be wrapping up the whole shebang in next year. And so we're cranking away towards that goal. And people keep asking me what that's going to be like once it's over, because it has been, it was sort of the title that for, you know, I've been doing other work in the industry, but for a lot of people, that was their first experience with my writing. And so not having it around, I can't even imagine what that's going to feel like, but it's a good feeling to know that we're working our way towards the end and that it's going to deliver, you know, the story that we've been planning for the last 4 years. So, yeah, it's been very cool.
Wow. Now, for somebody who hasn't read the book, how would you describe the series? What's the basic
premise? Skullkickers is an irreverent fantasy action comedy. It's sort of like The Hobbit meets The Hangover. So these two monster hunting mercenaries get themselves in capers, and then they need to sort of fight their way out. It's at its heart, it really is like my love letter to sword and sorcery and the kind of fantasy stuff that I loved growing up, only with a bit of a twist. And so it's this irreverent, kind of sarcastic look at sword and sorcery and fantasy storytelling and kind of the tropes of the heroes of destiny and all that kind of stuff. Just done with a sarcastic kind of self-aware take.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty good. 27 is out. 28. Do you have any idea when issue number 28 is going
to
come out?
28 should be out. Oh, here we go. Going to the calendar again. I need to keep this stuff all organized because you can it can creep up on you pretty quick. 28 will be out June 25th.
Okay. So, it would have been something if they'd both come out on the same day.
That
would have been.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes you want that kind of thing, but other times it's nice to sort of be spread out over the month, because then you're like, you're on the stands, you know, each week for a few weeks, and it feels kind of nice. With the number of projects I'm doing right now, when I'm lucky, I can cover almost every week of the month, and that feels kind of good. Where you can go to the comic book shop and you're like, oh, there's a new one out. And sometimes you lose track. Like when you're working on the books, your focus is on, you know, 5 months ahead of whatever is currently coming out. And so when I'm really busy, I don't even remember that I've got a new issue coming out. I'm just, my head's down, focused on the new chapter of whatever. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people will tweet at me or they'll send me a photo of themselves holding a book, and I'm like, oh, that came out? Great. That's cool. I'm glad it, awesome, you know.
Now, what other you mentioned that there's other projects going on. What other projects are you working on that you can talk about?
So I've got Skullkickers coming from Image. I write the Samurai Jack comic series, which continues the award-winning cartoon.
Great book, by the way.
Thank you. I'm having an absolute ball with it. And it was originally supposed to be just a 5-issue miniseries, but it sold very well, and Cartoon Network and IDW were very happy with it. And so they've asked Andy Soriano and I to keep it going. As you know, for the foreseeable future. And so we're on board cranking away on that. So the 8th issue of Samurai Jack also came out today. So I got two books on the stands at once, which is kind of cool. And I just finished writing the 12th script. So, and we're committed to do at least 15 issues, but there's already talk of going past that. So with a bit of luck, it'll keep rolling onwards from there.
I love the show.
No, the show, I was a huge fan of the show, and being involved with it now is really just wonderful. It's been one of the best professional experiences I've had in this business. It's been really creatively fulfilling and very exciting, and the response from readers and fans of the show have been just really heartwarming all the way through, and Andy and I could not be happier working away on it.
Great.
In addition to that, I'm writing a comic series for Dynamite called Pathfinder, which is an adaptation of a very popular game series, sort of like a tabletop role-playing game series. And so it's not sort of, it is a tabletop role-playing game. And so I've been working away on that for, you know, about a year and a half. So they just started a new story arc. So essentially my 13th issue of Pathfinder just came out, and I'm committed through to 18 on that and really thoroughly enjoying it. I've also got just a bevy of projects going on. I've announced a brand new creator-owned book that's going to be coming out in August called Wayward from Image Comics. And this one's been in the pipeline for a little bit, but it just got announced a couple weeks ago. And that one is sort of a action-packed sort of supernatural coming-of-age story. So it's the way I describe it to people is, you know, kind of Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Japanese mythological monsters. So these teenagers are going to be fighting up against, they're going to be fighting sort of remnants of Japan's mythological past in the streets of Tokyo. And the artist Steve Cummings and I, we've been friends for years and we've been wanting to work together on a project. And this is sort of playing to both our strengths in terms of like cool action and monsters and kind of cool and kooky kind of Japanese cultural stuff all mixed in together.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Wow. You're a busy guy.
Yeah, other than that, nothing. You know, pretty
bored. That's all. Well, I do have to ask you one question. Let's say that Figment comes out and does very well.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to do another miniseries based on the character?
Yeah, you know, you never know how these things are going to turn out. And so, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. In many ways, because I was coming in to do a Disney project, I kind of steeled my resolve like, you know, they're going to be asking for lots of very specific things, and it's Disney, so they're going to have very, you know, stringent kind of corporate expectations. And not that that's a bad thing, but just that it makes the project very different when you go into it as a writer, when you know that you're working with a client and you're like, okay, well, they've got their own plans, and I've got to kind of step away from my own expectations and try and deliver on theirs. But what's been really great about this is we really came together as a group, and we all brought something special to it. And the Disney guys have been very, you know, open to my ideas. And I think we all came in and realized we weren't actually far off from the same kinds of goals. And so we were able to make something where everyone involved was very proud and is very proud and excited about it. And so that's, you know, in this business, you can't always assume that's going to be the case. You know, when you're working with big properties and you're working with big companies, you've got to be willing to sort of flex, you know, to make something, to finish a project. And I didn't, you know, I haven't really felt like I've had to compromise on sort of my ideas in order to deliver on what they wanted, which is great. So, yeah, I'd be up for writing more. I'd be up for more kind of adventures. And I'm already talking to Marvel about a potential other project. And so it's a nice time. It's an exciting time to be building stories and to be working in comics for me.
Now, I was going to ask you if Marvel was going to say to you, which Marvel character would you like to do?
Oh, I can answer that in a heartbeat.
Okay.
So because I'm such a fantasy fan, characters that have sort of a fantasy element and also are superheroes are very near and dear to me. So Doctor Strange would be my guy. I know that's probably not going to happen anytime soon, but he's my guy. That would be someone that I would put my all into. And I made that very clear to the guys at Marvel. I'm just, like, crazy about Doctor Strange. I think that the potential for that character is limitless. And it's been a while since he's really had a showcase kind of a book. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you do a great job with him. That would be fun to see, because you'd not only have the magic be a part of it and make sense out of it, which sometimes magic doesn't get made sense out of, but you'd also have the character and have us, you know, learn about the character as well. So that would be fun to see you do Doctor Strange.
Yeah, you know, any of those kinds of characters where there's a supernatural bent, you know, whether it's Ghost Rider or Cloak and Dagger or those kinds of urban characters, I love a lot. I like that kind of mysterious, you know, city at night kind of stuff. That stuff, that little corner of the Marvel Universe, I think is extra cool. So any of those types of characters are right up my alley. And Doctor Strange is pretty core in there. So
very cool. Well, Jim, I wish you more success, except you probably got plenty of success going on right now. So just hope that everything works out very well and we get to keep reading your good stuff, you know, for a long time to come, because I really enjoyed Figment number one.
Thank you. Well, and if people want to find out about the stuff that I'm working on and read up on upcoming projects, they can go to my website, jimzub.com. And in addition to just the sort of typical announcements and interviews, I've also got a whole series of tutorials all about working in the business, how to pitch your story ideas, how to format a script, all kinds of good stuff.
Wow. That sounds like a good place. Say that again so people know.
It's jimzub.com, so J-I-M-Z-U-B.com.
Well, that sounds like a great place to start, especially if you're interested in the industry and breaking in. So great talking with you, Jim, and boy, just keep up the great work because we're enjoying it out here.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the support.
Imagination, imagination, a dream can be a dream come true, with just that spark from me and you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. And that's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have more interviews and other good things. But until then, keep reading your comics.